From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 20th, 2018. And on this day, more legal proceedings focus on voter-approved Medicaid expansion. The opportunity for Maine to benefit from the contributions of newcomers. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
The 55 or so people who assembled outside Senator Susan Collins' Bangor office today pulled no punches as they condemned what they view as the senator's failure to support a survivor of sexual assault. Jennifer Mitchell reports.
The now familiar chant of "No, no, Kavanaugh" morphed into something a little different at this protest. When Christine Blasey Ford came forward with allegations that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh had sexually assaulted her back in the early 1980s, Collins should have believed her and supported her, says protester Gail Foss.
I am sorry that you are being victimized, and I am so furious at our senator.
Foss called Kavanaugh a sexual predator and said that government had been taken over by sociopathic weirdos. Others, like Melissa Berkey, called Collins' reaction to Ford's allegations disappointing for survivors of sexual assault. And she also says the senator has done nothing to ensure a thorough vetting of a candidate who will sit for life.
I'm very angry with Senator Collins because she's standing on very much supporting the Republican timeline that there needs to be a vote immediately.
Collins said this week that Ford and Kavanaugh should both testify under oath, and she's questioned the 11th-hour emergence of the information, which she says has done a disservice to both Kavanaugh and his accuser. Collins says the allegations are very serious and need to be heard in committee. Collins' critics say she's treating Ford like she's on trial. The protest was organized by the Mabel Wadsworth Center and Maine Women's Lobby. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
The legal battle over implementation of the voter-approved expansion of Medicaid is heating up. Advocates for expansion are charging Governor Paula Page and the Maine Department of Health and Human Services are acting in bad faith and want the court to step in. Maine Public senior political producer Mal Leary joins me from the State House. Mal, what are the advocates asking the court to do?
Well, Ed, Maine Equal Justice Partners, through their attorneys, of course, are basically asking the Superior Court to find the state in contempt of the court order to file the expansion plan with federal regulators. They argue the governor's accompanying letter with the plan that he did file, asking that the plan be denied, shows he's not following the court order. They're asking that the court appoint a receiver to take over the whole process of filing the application with the federal government and to file the plan for federal consideration by the end of this month. They have filed a motion to expedite the ruling. Really, what they're asking it is that Justice Michaela Murphy rule from the bench on their motion.
That seems unusual. The advocates want the court to bypass the executive branch with this independent third-party receiver filling the expansion. So what's the rush to get the filing by the end of this month? I mean, this has been going on for a while.
As you recall, it took a court case to get the LePage administration to file an expansion plan in the first place. The Supreme Court got involved. They sent the case back to the Superior Court to hold hearings and develop the facts of the dispute. The Superior Court ordered the filing with the federal government, and the governor argues he complied with that because he did file with the federal government a plan for expansion, even though he also asked him to reject it at the same time. What's driving this request for expedited action is that under federal rules, if a plan is not properly filed by the end of a quarter, even if it is eventually adopted. It will not cover any claims during this quarter by those that are later found to be eligible for coverage. So we're talking about the potential of a number of people that should be getting benefits in this period of time that we've been in, not being able to get them simply because of a glitch in the rules.
So what's the next step in this legal battle?
Well, next week on the 24th, Justice Murphy will hold a telephone conference with the various lawyers that are representing both the advocates and the governor's office. She may choose to rule then on the advocate's motion for a receiver and expedited action, or she may not. And, of course, there may be other motions filed between now and then that the justice may want to consider. And Justice Murphy will ask for written arguments in the matter as well as this whole matter proceeds forward.
Maine Public Senior Political Producer Mal Leary speaking to me from Augusta. Mal, thanks.
Thank you, Ed.
A new report estimates that 27,000 Mainers would be eligible for services if voters approve a ballot question this November to establish universal home care. Supporters of Question 1 say the report released today by the University of Southern Maine's Muskie School shows the promise of how the universal home care proposal would improve services in Maine. But opponents say the study serves as a warning about its likely pitfalls. Patty White reports.
According to the Muskie School report, about 5,600 people currently receive state-funded in-home support, but nearly five times as many are in need of services.
There are 27,000 Mainers who need assistance with daily tasks like bathing and getting dressed. But people in Maine who need care aren't getting it under the current system.
Stephen Campbell is from PHI, a national organization that advocates for quality care. PHI and other supporters of Question 1 touted the findings of the Muskie School report during a teleconference call on Thursday. The Muskie School doesn't take a position on Question 1, but the report was paid for by the Service Employees International Union, which has provided financial backing to supporters. The purpose of the study was to evaluate how the Universal Home Care Program, which would be the first of its kind in the country, could be implemented. Kevin Simowitz is political director of the national organization Caring Across Generations, which also supports the ballot initiative.
The report makes clear that implementing the universal home care proposal is not only possible, but that implementing the program could allow the state to support long overdue reform efforts.
Universal home care would be implemented and managed by a board comprised of direct care providers, workers, and those who receive services. The Muskie School report notes that one of the board's tasks would be to coordinate with existing state programs to avoid creating negative consequences, such as unfair differences in services or workforce shortages. Opponents to Question 1, including Jeff Austin of the Maine Hospital Association, see that as a caution sign.
That is a huge takeaway, I think, from this report that everybody should pay heed to, and that is they point out that there's a lot of pitfalls in trying to somehow merge this program with existing programs.
Austin says the universal home care proposal has the potential to set up a two-tier system. That's because it promises to boost direct worker pay, but existing state programs have to work within set pay scales and reimbursement rates. Austin says the Hospital Association and other opponents, including the Home Care and Hospice Alliance and the Maine Association of Community Service Providers, believe that the way to improve home care is to build on existing programs.
And not just try to build an entirely new program off on the side and come jam it in without talking to the Department of Labor, the Department of Health and Human Services, the agencies that have provided this service for decades.
There are other points of dispute about the proposal that the report does not address. One is around the funding for the program, which is through a 3.8% tax on income. Supporters say the tax is only on individual income above a certain threshold. Opponents say the tax would also apply to household income, placing an undue burden on working families. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
As a refugee resettlement center, Maine has welcomed waves of immigrants fleeing the dangers of their home countries. But immigration patterns have changed, and advocates say the state has an opportunity to benefit from the contributions of newcomers. Earlier today on Maine Calling, host Jennifer Rook spoke with Fatuma Hussein, founder of the Immigrant Resource Center of Maine, and Reza Jalali, a Muslim scholar and educator at the University of Southern Maine.
that?
Well, the face of immigration has changed in Maine. I mean, many people assume that all are refugees, and that's not the case anymore. In fact, two-thirds of all new Mainers, as we like to call the immigrants, are professionals who have come as immigrants and not as refugees.
I want to ask each of you, how welcoming you think Maine is?
So in Maine, we seem to have this pull and push. We want immigrants when we need them in our mills, in our factories, and now in our offices, in the service sector. And then we don't like them when they buy a house and come to live to live next door to us. So I would say it's a mixed bag. And at times, southern part of the state seems to be accepting, evolving into even becoming welcoming, where we know that in other parts of the state is still intolerance or touching in on tolerance, which we don't like that. Tolerance is like tolerating the mosquitoes in summertime in Maine. We want Maine and the whole state to become accepting and welcoming.
And Fatuma, you've lived through a lot in Lewiston. How are things now? How are things today?
So obviously Lewiston-Auburn has a history of you know, having a lot of influx of Somalis without nobody knowing. So we just showed up out of nowhere in the middle of winter, very cold, and here we were, finding ourselves in a place where we had no place to return to. It is very imperative and very important for Mainers to recognize and acknowledge that the state of Maine has changed some 20, 30 years ago. This is not a change that's risen to us. Is there resistance? Absolutely. But we've done a lot of work on the ground. Although we've come from a very painful place that was so racist and so blunt in terms of eradicating Somalis out of Lewiston-Auburn, we now have a very solid, good foundation to work from. The work that we've done in the last 15, 17 years has enabled us to be neighbors, to be friends.
And you said there's a recent report that gives us a few numbers, sort of quantifying the impact of new Mainers in the state.
Absolutely. And according to this report, Mainers in immigrant-led households, for example, had $953.9 million in spending power. This is after-tax income just in the year 2014. And also as consumers, immigrants add hundreds of million dollars to Maine's economy every year. Other examples include even unauthorized, undocumented immigrants in Maine paying an estimated $245 million in federal taxes and another $116 million in state and local taxes in 2014. Or another example, 2,245 immigrant business owners accounted for 2.2% of all self-employed Mainers. When immigrants start businesses, they also create employment for non-immigrants. So we are not here to steal jobs. In fact, we are here to generate and create jobs.
It's my strong belief that communities have to converse. They have to educate each other. They have to work together. Because the reality is we're not moving. We're not going anywhere. This is our home. And therefore, whether you like it or not, you have to recognize and basically smell the coffee and say, our student population in Lewiston schools are 40%. People of color, students of color.
40%.
So, yeah, that's a very huge. We produce children for the state of Maine. I have 8 children of my own. What else do Mainers want? This is the workforce and this is the future of the state of Maine. They have to work together.
Fatuma Hussein, founder of the Immigrant Resource Center of Maine, and Reza Jalali, a Muslim scholar and educator at the University of Southern Maine, speaking with Maine Calling host Jennifer Rooks. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Thursday, September 20th, 2018. Thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, Mark Simpson, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.